This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
You're listening to a Spartan Dogs conversation between former Spartan athletes Andre Hudson, Tim Bogracus, and Todd Duckett.
What's up, everybody? We want to welcome you to the Spartan Dog Podcast. I'm here along with Tim Bogracus, Andre Hudson. This is Todd Duckett. And we're just going to talk about a little bit of stuff outside of our lives other than sports. And we all have businesses. We all are given and involved in the community. And I'm just going to pass the mic to Andre just so he can introduce himself and then pass to Tim. And then we're going to jump into life.
Yeah, Ty, like you said, this is Andre Hudson, former Spartan Dog member. Yes, we're in the building. Graduated Michigan State in 2001. Now I'm a proud business owner in the city of East Lansing, back in our old stomping grounds. Owner of Evergreen Car Wash and Detail, great car wash and detailing service we have here in town. And also a proud new owner of Conquest Health and Fitness, which is also here in East Lansing. So we're just here to chat it up, and I just want to introduce myself to all the listeners out there. Timbo, you want to let them know who you are?
Yeah, Timbo Gracus. I was on the first podcast, so they know me, Dre. Oh. So we're going to roll into this. We were kind of talking about this idea of when you graduate, you go out and you play, you're all over the world. I mean, you traveled all over the place playing. What was it about East Lansing that brought you back here? Like, we could have lived anywhere. All of us could have moved anywhere in the world. Basically, why come back to this community? What brought you back to Michigan State area? Why did it feel like home?
Yeah, for me personally, there was a lot of factors that came into play. Coming here from Dayton, Ohio, to Michigan State to play ball was a pretty big jump for me at the time. You know, most kids in high school, they adapt pretty well to their environments. It's kind of hard for them to get away and leave. And Michigan State was pretty close for me. It was about a 4-hour drive for my family to get up here. So it wasn't that much of a jump. But once I came up here, I pretty much developed a new family up here. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere around here was awesome, mm-hmm. from alumni to current players, not just from my team but from other sports. It was a real family atmosphere. I actually met my wife here at the university while I was at school, so she is a East Lansing resident, grew up, born and raised in East Lansing, so that was one of the major reasons for me mm-hmm. coming back to this area. But it was an easy transition for me to come back here. I lived in outside of Columbus, Ohio, for about 6 years during my professional career. And once I got to thinking about business and family, East Lansing was just at the top of my radar. I mean, it's a great atmosphere around here. Like I said, the alumni are very supportive. The fans, the community here is very supportive to former MSU athletes and Spartan Dogs out there. Very, very great community here. So I'm very pleased to be back here doing business. Look forward to the future and future endeavors here in the area.
So tell them about you, Timbo. What brought you back here to the community? Why do you come back and so involved in the university that you are? I don't even know if our listeners know how involved you are in the university. Why don't you share with us a little bit what you got going on?
Yeah, the reason I came back is I equate really all the opportunities I had academically, athletically to this area. Very similar to what Dre said, you know, there are so many people that just kind of reached their arms out and put them around me when I came to Michigan State, as well as my entire family are Spartans. We all came through Michigan State. So East Lansing felt like a second home to me outside of Flint. And, the same thing, I met my wife here on campus. I've really grown up from a high school kid to an adult and to a man within this community. And I just figured if I wanted to do something where I could give back to who really impacted me in my life, it was Michigan State and the Michigan State area. So, you know, it just felt like home. You know, and I got back done playing. I figured, you know, there's no better place to live, and it felt comfortable. I knew people here, and if I was going to try something new, I wanted to do it within the area where I knew people that could help. So I think, you know, when I first got back, I figured I knew exactly what to do, like we've said before. And then I figured out if I need help, and this is the best place to find it. So, you know, for me, that's the real reasoning. I don't know. I mean, you were in Atlanta,
yeah.
Seattle, Detroit.
That's what I'm talking about.
DC, Washington. Were you everywhere? Were you in Washington?
Yeah, I was there for a minute.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, the same thing. After that hot minute in DC, I mean, why the East Lansing area? After, I mean, you were in major cities. I mean, Atlanta's hard to leave. Seattle's beautiful. you know, what brought you back?
Well, I mean, all those cities were amazing, beautiful, great people, all the above. But at the core of me, I am a small town guy. I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan, born and raised, lived there for 18 years of my life. Then got a scholarship to Michigan State, which is East Lansing, lived there for the next 3 years of my life. So for 21 years, that is really who I was. I just happened to get a job in a big city, and that big city happened to be Atlanta, and then my next job just happened to be in D.C., so I was just kind of following the jobs, and then once my jobs were done, I'm a small city guy. I mean, I want to be back close to home, close to family. Like you both said, Michigan State's a family here. So I'm in Atlanta watching the football games, watching the basketball games. And when I got done, I mean, I couldn't wait to come back home. And being an hour from my hometown, being an hour from Detroit, just being right in the middle of the state, that's why I came back. And then to have the knowledge and the wisdom that I got from being in Atlanta, from seeing how big cities are, and maybe we can add a little fun to this city, and seeing all those things, and then coming back to do that was really what motivated me. But I think that might be something similar to what you guys did. I mean, Right. Going all over the country, you're all over the world. Right. I mean, like you mentioned family, you said your wife's from here. Coming back here, it's home.
Right, well, it's interesting you said that. One of the things that I find hard, it might be changing the subject a little bit, but a lot of athletes...
We don't have a subject.
All right, we'll just roll with it.
We're talking out here, baby.
Well, one thing I find that's kind of difficult for a lot of athletes, whether you're coming out of high school, coming out of college, is adjusting to life after. You know, what are you doing after you graduate from college, after you had a successful four-year career and you're looking for, you know, a new gig, or for some of us who actually play professionally, you know, you put all this hard work and dedication into developing, you know, being a top athlete or top in your field of what you do, and then all of a sudden you have to make a change or decide what's the next step. One thing I thought was interesting you said, TJ, is, you know, you stuck to your roots. Yeah. You're a small town guy. You played in big cities. You played on big stages. But at the end of the day, once that time is over with, now you have to figure out, what do I do next? Yeah. And you're going back to your roots. And that's something I kind of feel that I'm in the same way, and I think that's important for a lot of athletes out there to hear. You know, go back to what you're accustomed to, mm-hmm. what you're used to, feel what you naturally feel good at doing. And I think a lot of athletes struggle on, what do I do? You know, now that I'm done, I've graduated from college, you know, I've had a scholarship, all these, you know, people treated me in a good way and did all this and that for me, but now I'm graduated, I don't have a professional contract, where do I go? You know, mm-hmm. what do I do? And I think a lot of athletes have to take a look back and just see, what are you really about? Where did you come from? You know, what is your background, and what is your platform for success?
Right.
I mean, that was one thing that was key for me. Like you mentioned, I played ball overseas.
You won a national championship.
Won a national championship here at Michigan State in 2000. Went on to play basketball overseas for 9 years. And, you know, once I was done, it was about my last year over there. I was playing in Rome. And I would speak to my wife quite often, like, okay, this is...
Oh, she wasn't there with you?
No, she was with me. Oh, okay. Over in Rome.
How did you do that?
No, why should... Well, she wasn't with me the whole time, but, you know, she went back and forth a lot. But it got to a point where I was like, you know what, babe, we got two kids. You know, we're away from home. I'm a family guy. I'm a small town guy. I like being around family. I like going to functions and watching, going to games and all that type of stuff. It's time to... You know, put this aside and start looking at my next venture.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what led me to coming back to East Lansing. I started thinking about, I've always been business-minded, wanted to go into business since I was a little kid. And, you know, I just took that leap. I just took that leap of faith. I mean...
I want to come back.
I was going to say, a lot of it will hinge on, like we said earlier, I think, you know, a lot of people struggle with figuring out what that next step is. Because there's this thought process that they shouldn't, they don't need to ask for help.
Yeah,
that, you know, a lot of things have been done for you, you know, throughout your career.
Right.
And then you're almost afraid to ask for help because you look weak in the eyes of some people, and they expect you to know what you're supposed to do. Like we were talking before you got here, like we people just think you played professional ball for all these years, you should know what's next.
Right.
And as soon as you say, I'm at a loss, I don't know what to do, people kind of look at you like, man, how do you not know? Like, you've been so successful in everything you've done.
Yeah.
But success isn't, that's just not a defining characteristic of you. It's just something that you did.
Something you did. But the thing is, I think a lot of, 90% of athletes probably fall in that arena where they just don't know what to do. Yeah. And they're scared, you know. Yeah. A lot of guys, because they work so hard to be so good at what they do, a lot has been given to them. Where now they're stepping into a new arena. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to ask for it. And it's a big problem. Yeah. It's a big problem, I think.
I want to go back to two things you said. The first thing I want to go back to is something we talked about before you got here, was about how you said you've been about business for a long time. Like, right. When you were young, you were about your business.
Right.
That also, having that knowledge and understand, you also won a national championship here.
Right.
So you understood the business of sport. You understood the business of team, how it worked, how it ran, how the whole team works together. And by doing that, you were able to win a championship. And that's something that we brought up earlier, is where I'm just yesterday, I realized all what you just said.
Right.
I realized it yesterday. Like, this is a business.
Right.
Sports is a business. And if you treat the team as your business, then you're going to be very, very successful. But if you're just playing out of passion, you're going to have fun playing. You may put up good numbers,
right.
But you might not technically win the Super Bowl, win the national championship.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You might not be as successful without that, you know, having that drive. You know, it's one thing to play with passion, to work with passion, but unless you really commit to something,
yes.
Set goals, are committed to teammates, co-workers.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Exactly. I mean, sports is a business. There are a lot of things to sports that I didn't understand business-wise when I was in the arena, but being out of it now and being in the business field and looking back on my playing days at Michigan State and high school, my professional days, I see a lot of similarities between sports and business. And I think a lot of athletes they're just not aware. Yeah, it's hard to define. They don't understand it. I mean, they have a lot of the business knowledge already just from being in the athletic arena, but
they don't have words for it.
They don't know how to bring it out, and that's a big issue right now.
And the other part that I want to hit back that you said was going back to our roots. And to be quite honest, us creating this group, us having this podcast, this is us going back to our roots. I mean, our roots are, to be honest, are built in a team environment, are built with camaraderie, with being able to share our energies. And here we are trying to come together as a team and be that business. So this conversation, what we're doing, is part of those roots.
Right.
I would agree. I mean, I think anybody that plays on a team, especially when you get to college, all the experiences or what you learn, those lessons that you learn when you first get there, don't always come from the coaching staff. They come from those older players who have set that groundwork. Like, I learned a lot from Dre and DT, Charlie and those guys, both on and off the court, about how to handle practicing, school, you know, both good and bad ways to do things.
Right. Yes.
But it's not something that – and it was talked about from the coaching staff, but it's something that's driven in from your teammates. And I think the same thing is when we started working, that's who we're looking for now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're getting into the business world right now.
Yeah.
Dre's just starting out. We're trying to find those older people, our older teammates, so to speak, who have that knowledge, who are gonna show us, hey, this is how you file an LLC. This is how you do this.
Yep.
This is how you file your taxes. So it's crazy how the parallels kind of run with each other.
And the sweet part too that you said is we're trying to figure it out and we're trying to get through it, but as a whole, we get to do it with each other now. I mean, we get to ask each other, man, what do you think about this? Will this work? Maybe we should do a commercial together. Maybe we should do this. And it's no different than having a conversation outside of the locker room saying, man, like, I would say, man, if you just block that linebacker, I'm a score. You know, that safety's coming. And I'm sure you might be like, man, if you just throw a lob, I'm a dunk it. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a big benefit to what we're creating here. And, you know, for all you Spartan Dog listeners or future Spartan Dog listeners out there, you need to take a look into us. Check us out. Website will be up here fairly shortly. But Spartan Dogs, please be on the lookout for it. But like you say, TJ, what we're creating here is something that is going to benefit other athletes. You know, I think this whole conversation has been, how hard is it for athletes to – make that adjustment to the next level? And it's tough. Like Tim, like you referred to, coming here at State, we all had that upperclassman or the big brothers, per se, to kind of help us and help us along the way. Where when you step out of school, you don't really have that support system. I mean, you don't so much get it from your university. You're kind of out there on your own. It's not just athletes, it's students in general, but yeah. For the athlete, I think
this is from our point of view.
From our point of view, I think it's a little bit tougher for the athlete. I mean, a lot of expectations are laid on the athlete while they're in school, and they're expected to be successful when they leave, regardless of what the situation may be. What we're creating here, I think, is awesome. We've already been able to help out a number of Spartan athletes already. I think they're starting to see the beneficiary factors in what we're doing. And we just want to continue to grow it, man. I mean, I think we're doing some good things, and I'm really looking forward to the future with this group.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
You're listening to a Spartan Dogs conversation between former Spartan athletes Andre Hudson, Timbo Gracchus, and Todd Duckett.
This is Todd, Andre, and Tim here. Now, also, when we were playing, we're together. You have 5, 4, 3 years with someone.
Right.
Every day, mm-hmm. 9 hours a day, going through ups, going through downs, friends, girls, family, going through young adult problems at 18, 19 years old, defining who you are in those moments. And then because you either leave school early or you graduate, you're forced to leave your family and disperse into the world, into a new environment. You spent your young adult years with your teammate, man, being mad at the coach together or studying for a test together. And now you're in the real world on your own, and you have new challenges, new businesses, owners, new things you have to do. But you don't have the teammate that you can trust and you can believe and you have cried together. You don't have that. And I think this is a great, I get that feeling like we're back in the locker room, except it's a boardroom. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. It's we're not as sweaty and smell a little better, but it's kind of the same thing. And I think even with Tim, being able from a different sport, we're now on like the same team. You know what I mean? To be basketball guys, football guys, now it's like the same team.
I think, you know, sport doesn't matter
yes.
in a lot of the cases. It could be, you know, the experience that you've had as a football player going through a conditioning workout, the person on the baseball team yeah. or the women's soccer team have had that same exact feeling sitting in a locker after a workout, just drained.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what sport it is. It's just – athletes in general have that same shared experience, just like somebody who started, like Zuckerberg, who started Facebook, has the same experience as the guy who started MySpace.
Yep.
He
yep.
just learned a little bit more than the guy MySpace guy did.
Yep.
So it's, you know, cross-culturally, it doesn't just – it's if you're in that same realm, like if you're a business guy, you know, I'm sure the guys you worked with when you were first working on your gym, mm-hmm. they went through the same thing, and they were able to say – I remember when this happened to me.
Right.
Yeah. And it makes us better. It makes
yeah,
us all better.
I mean, it's yeah. being able to learn from those guys. Like, and going back to Conquest, when you were going through that process, how much did you rely on your experiences of dealing with people as an athlete? Like, how much did that play into sitting down and having conversations with people? Because you and I both played for a coach who feedback was direct, very blunt,
right.
to the point. You knew what you were getting,
right.
and you don't always run into that with people.
Yeah.
But how much did you rely on that experience when you were putting this whole thing together? Because it came out, you know, pretty quickly.
It came together pretty quickly. You know, it's tough. Like I said before, it's tough for most athletes step into a new arena. For me, and like we said before, there's a lot of expectations set upon you as a former athlete. That's somebody in the spotlight. For me, being in East Lansing, I'm known for winning a national championship.
Six eight.
So I stand out when I'm around town. People see me often. So it was very difficult for me at first to kind of ask questions. You know, questions that were unknown to me, but maybe seemed pretty simple to others. So it was humbling. You know, I mean, I had to kind of gather myself and start from the bottom. The first business I started was Evergreen, car wash and detail, and truly humbling experience for me. We kind of put the word out, put fillers out to people around the town, people we knew from the alumni, people who just recognized us and said, hey, me and my partner, David Thomas, we're trying to start a car wash business. You know, can you have any recommendations or contacts for us to get a hold of? And eventually we got a contact to one of the local country clubs here in Lansing, Walnut Hills. And it was pretty much me, David, two former national champions, and two other guys we just hired, and we were out there cleaning cars. You know, we're out there washing members, golfers, gold golf, and we're washing their cars. We're sweating our butts off and, you know, dirty and fingernails dirty. And we got members coming up saying, hey, aren't you Andre Hudson? You won a national championship? But I'm telling you, it was a humbling experience, but it was something I had to go through. It was a process I had to go through. And the main reason we did it is because me and David both looked back and said, you know what? When we came to state, we weren't all Americans. You know, we weren't McDonald's all Americans who got highly recruited. We had to work our way, you know, each year, get better and better and keep working and learning. And the experiences is what got us to that national championship 3 years later. So I definitely used my basketball experience in my business career. I preach it to everybody. You know, hard work pays off. You got to start. If you want to do something, start from the bottom and work your way up. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my principle.
Now, when you were asking around, getting feelers about car wash, did anybody say you are absolutely out of your mind to open up a car wash?
Oh.
There's 17,000 $4 car washes around.
Absolutely.
Why am I going to come to your car wash?
I tell you, one of the biggest people that kind of slapped me in my face was Coach Izzo.
Yeah.
Sitting in his office, he said, Andre, now he knows I just came from playing basketball. I made all this money. And he said, are you serious? You're going to wash some cars? I mean, he was like, yeah, I can get you a job. You can come videotape a practice or something. You really need some money. No, Coach, this is what I really want to do. And he looked me in my eye and he said, oh, if this is something you really want to do, then go after it. He's a man who believes in passion and following your dreams. And he understood where I was coming from. But, yeah, it was humbling, man.
How hard was it for you to discover – we were talking about it. What your why was after basketball, because for 25 years, basketball was your goal. It was your why you did things, why you worked out, was your passion.
Right.
It's done. Or when you were in Rome,
right,
and you started looking at how hard was it for you to say, this is my new passion. This is the path I want to take. And it's completely different than what I've been doing, because we all saw the journey that Todd took.
Right.
And it was a little different than most people thought. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody ever thought you'd be washing their car while they were playing 18.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how was that process of figuring out what your why was going to be next?
Well, it wasn't too hard. I mean, like I said, growing up, I always had visions of owning a business. I wanted to be in control. I wanted to run a staff and run a successful business. So my last year in Rome, basketball was just really starting to become overwhelming for me. Traveling, being away from home, having my family away from home was just, it wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. And so speaking with my brother-in-law, my partner, David, we had this idea for this, you know, elaborate car wash, something you probably see in Vegas or somewhere.
I remember hearing about it. It was pretty elaborate. I remember the original.
And so, I mean, we planned it out, man. We spoke to advisors. We spoke with small business developers and sat down, developed a plan. We had financials, everything. And then when it came down to do it, it was like, okay, well, I guess we can't really make it that elaborate, you know. Once we got the numbers down and saw our area, and was like, okay. I mean, there's a lot that goes into to starting a business. You really have to do your research. You have to know competitors and what the market produces and demographics. And to be honest, what we were thinking of doing, it really wouldn't fit this Lansing area. And it hit us hard. Once we realized that, we were like, okay, well, we've done all this work. Now what do we do? Mm-hmm. And it got to a point and said, you know what? We said we're going to do this. We're going to do it. If we got to go to Walnut Hills and wash cars for members and humble ourselves, that's what we're going to do. But we had a dream. We had a passion. We had a why. We knew what we wanted to do, and that's kind of how it came about. And we've been growing ever since. I mean, I encourage anybody who has a dream out there, go after it.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of it. Go after it.
And what I love that we all have done, it's not being defined as one thing. It's not being defined as an athlete, just a football player.
Right.
When that's over, it's saying, man, I want to do more. And for you, you had a plan.
Right.
For me, I'm like, I don't know. You know, I know I want to do more. I knew I'm more of an athlete, but I didn't know.
Right.
And I had the drive and the competitor in me is you're going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about trying to find what is that.
Right.
And before, like Tim said, a lot of guys get internships and I can try this for a year or 6 months. Oh, I don't like that. I can try this for a year. But we had no place to get internships. We had no way to do that. And a big part of the group that we have started is to give guys chance. We all own businesses. So if any of former athlete wants a chance, there's a chance that you could get an internship here and at least learn some terminology, learn, worst case scenario, learn how to empower yourself again to reach and dream again, like you just said.
Yeah, I would say, and also, but I don't want to, I'm not going to counter your point, but I mean, we, to a certain extent, we got the best internship when it comes down, you know what I mean? Like, we don't have a resume.
Yeah.
We don't have an internship that looks good on a, like, we can't say we worked at, we looked at Carl Sam's and we did case studies or blah, blah, blah. But like you said, when it comes down to working within a team structure, that's all that this boils down to, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you're 100% right. And I wasn't able to realize what all I was had been involved in. Right. And part of that is, like, I mean, I would sit back at home, and as a kid, I just wanted to be an NFL player. I wanted to be a player in the NFL. I didn't want to be the owner of a team.
Right.
Now, if I had the business mentality as a kid, yeah, I'm going to be a player, then I'm going to own the team.
Right.
Well, when I got to the professional level, I had access to the owner of the team. I had access to the secretary. I could go up to the secretary and say, can I sit with you for the day?
Right.
What are the problems that you deal with? How do you get better?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't understand. And knowing that in a NFL team, you got everything from the owner to the janitorial staff that you can talk to, that you can say, hey, I'm looking at starting a janitorial supplies company. What's the best chemicals you use here in the shower?
Right.
You know, stuff like that I didn't know. And now realizing it, it's like, oh, we could have asked those questions.
Right.
And this group, it's to shine a light on those young men and young women and say, you're playing for a Division I school. You're playing for a head coach that has won a Super Bowl or a national basketball championship.
Mm-hmm.
Go talk to them.
Right.
Go talk to the marketing people.
Right.
Go talk to the staff and just talk.
You know, just knowing that it's a business, what we're getting into. Sports is a business, and you have to understand if you can take advantage of it while you're there, it's going to benefit you in the future.
Early.
And I think a lot of athletes don't realize that. For me personally, I was just sharing, you know, a lot of athletes get a lot of summer jobs or when the off season, you know, they'll find a job for you. And I had a pretty nice job in the accident fund, which is a pretty large insurance company here in the Lansing area. It was a petty job. I was sharpening pencils and, you know, putting papers away, nothing really. But I didn't really take it seriously. But now being back in the area 10 years later, a lot of those people who I was in the office with, who I really didn't remember, they remember me.
Mm-hmm.
And they remember how I acted while I was there. They know I was a big-time athlete. I could have easily blown it off. But because I went in there and did my job, they respect me a lot more today. And I was just telling that to some athletes who are actually at the university right now who are in the same situation, guys who have jobs, you know, working for law firms. These two kids working for a law firm, two lawyers who I know are pretty prominent here in this town. And they were blowing them off, just, you know, not showing up, which, I mean, to be honest, it happens. When you're an athlete, you're doing so much.
You're young, you're out,
you got summer school, you got workouts. I mean, it's a lot. They're asking you to go work 4 hours a day. Trust me, it's hard. But I think what athletes need to understand today that it is a business, and the better you can establish relationships while you have the opportunity, the better it's going to benefit you in the future, because you're not going to have that opportunity 5 years
down
the road.
It's pretty similar to the, you know, I used to always, before I knew, you know, who was on the trips with us, we'd always have people on the planes with us. I equated those people being on a basketball trip with us that they had to be important.
Right.
That was in my mind. I was like, they're on the team plane. I don't know who you are, but you're important.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go out of my way to at least talk to them because I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
But I thought in my head they have to be somebody because they don't just let anybody come on our plane. But to go back to your point, I had the same kind of a deal with an internship. I worked at a commercial real estate company here in town, and I did the same thing. I kind of blew it off or whatnot. And now that I look back, I'm starting to become more interested in commercial real estate now. And if I would have really thought about it, as a 20-year-old, I would have been in somebody's office, like, how does this work? Yeah. Like, what do I need to know? What do I need to do to get certified? Like, how do I get certified for some of this stuff? Like, what do I need to do?
That's the thing, though. As a 20-year-old, you don't think like that. Your ideas are, like Ty said, you only want to get to the NFL or you want to get to the NBA. I mean, you got this little job that you work 10 hours a week.
Away from your training.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm trying to train. I'm trying to get to the NBA. But you don't realize the NBA only lasts for so long. Yeah. There's life after that. Yeah. And the relationships you can establish as an athlete while you have that access is so important.
And I think that's a good way to even expand what you do. If you're an athlete, maybe you should read more.
Right.
Maybe you should write more. Maybe you should find a backup, a job. And it doesn't necessarily have to say you're taking your eyes off the prize, but again, no matter who you are, you can't play football, basketball for 30 years. Yeah. At some point, you're gonna have to stop. And I had a coach that always said, you're only as good as your last play, so you could get hurt anytime.
Right.
So during that, when that happens, what are you doing? Are you preparing yourself? So to the young listeners that are listening, Think of some other things. We're not trying to steer you away from a dream because we all chased the dream. Trust me.
Right.
We all gave it everything we have. But coming from a older point of view, we're coming back saying just pick up another craft. I mean, even if it's being a plumber, you know, if it's being a mechanic, whatever it is, just learn a craft. And if dream one doesn't come through and your dream was to be a professional athlete and it doesn't work and you have that passion, then put the skill into being a professional plumber and be the best plumber in the country. Be the best plumber you've ever been. And if you can do that, no matter what it is, you're guaranteeing yourself a great chance to be successful. Ultimately, education is important, but being able to reach out in a different area will be a great way to help set yourself up.
Yeah, absolutely. And to add to that point, the other thing I would say is very important is relationships.
Yes.
Don't think you're too big because you're a scholarship athlete, you've been on TV, and just all of a sudden you're bigger than the world, so you don't have to respect others.
Yeah.
Like Tim said, there's times we flew on a plane and, you know, there's 10 people on a plane that we have no idea who they are, but I know they're important. A guy like Tim, he had the courage to go up there and speak to him. There's other guys who were too big. You know, they think they're too important. They're more important than this other guy that's on the plane flying, you know, first class while we're in the back, but you're bigger than him. Give it 10 years and then see where you're at to see how that fits. You know what I mean?
It's a great thing just that I've always heard was the same people you see coming up are the same people you're going to see on the way down.
Yes.
And to be on the other side of football – back in East Lansing, Michigan, it's the truth. It's the truth. And I think all the guys who are here, it's the truth. Andre just said it from the job he was doing. And the thing is, the older audience that we're talking to now also understand that a lot of the young men and women don't understand that. So when you do see them in later in life, don't judge them from what they did in the past.
Right.
Give them an opportunity, and if they fail again, shame on them. But understand there has been some growth, and that's what it's about. And we're all been young at one point, and we all do need that push when we get older. We all do need that assistance, and to be quite honest and quite frank, we're starting this group to push ourselves because the pushes haven't been coming from any other place. So having that same commonality and that same struggle, man, it's no different than we getting ready to start 2-a-days and let's go. Let's go.
I think I'm going to wrap up with the same question that Todd and I talked about on the first podcast. You've transitioned into business extremely well, we'll say. What is one thing that you took from sports, your sport background, whether it be pro, college, that you have really transitioned and used in your everyday professional business life now?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is just, and I mentioned it before, it's hard work. It's putting the time in. One thing I learned here at State, like I told you before, I wasn't highly recruited. I wasn't an All-American, but I worked at it. I really worked at my craft, getting better. I tried to learn, you know, study film, listen to coaches, listen to teammates. It just got better over time. And that's kind of the same idea I've taken into the business field. When I first started both of my businesses, I didn't realize it would take as much time out of my life as it does. But, you know, being in the business, I've fallen back to, you know, the principles I followed as an athlete. And that's put time in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was times where I used to go into the gym 10, 11 o'clock at night to go shoot. Well, now I'm doing the same thing in my business. I'm going in at 10, 11 o'clock at night to – you know, check the clear the register or to make sure all my bookkeeping is up to date. So it's just a mentality that, you know, if you work hard, if you put the time in, you're usually going to see results. And that's kind of the philosophy I've taken into the business field.
Awesome, man. We want to thank you guys for listening to the Spartan Dog Podcast. If you need to get in shape, check out Conquest Health and Fitness. What's the address?
15500 Chandler Road. That's north side of East Lansing.
And if your car is a mess, because I know it's wintertime,
yes,
go to Evergreen Car and Detail on Grand River.
On 2700 East Grand River. It's right next to where the old Hershey Steakhouse used to be.
They do a great job. Well, thanks again to Todd, TJ Duckett, Andre Hudson, for joining me for this talk. And we look forward to doing these more. Later.
Peace. Go Green.
See ya.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was former Spartan athletes Timbo Grakas, Todd Duckett, and Andre Hudson with another of their Spartan Dogs podcasts. To hear it again or any of their others, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to Greening the Great Lakes Jim Byram. He's president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association, an old friend as well. Jim, how are things going these days?
Well, it's a great time to be in agriculture and a great time to be in Michigan agriculture specifically, Kirk. It's been a good ride.
Yes, it certainly has for the last several years. You know, you've been on the program three or four times, and I don't think I've ever asked you to provide an overview of the Michigan Agribusiness Association, the mission and objectives of MABA.
Well, we basically engage in three things, Kirk. First, we do an awful lot of information, provide a lot of material to our members so they know what's going on in the industry, so that they're engaged in activities and events and programs they should be involved in. Second, we provide a lot of educational opportunities for members that are specifically engaged in things like applying pesticides or fertilizer in the grain industry, whatever it may be, basically all segments of our membership. And third, we do a lot of work with regulation and legislation, making sure that those that need to know what we're about or what kind of things we find important, that they're aware of those issues and aware of the kinds of things they can do to help our industry grow. Our membership tends to be pretty broad. We represent everybody involved on the business side of agriculture, those that supply inputs to farmers to plant crops, those that help feed livestock, as well as we handle a lot of the grain on the other end, our members do. We do all those kinds of things. We don't really represent the equipment side of the industry, however, and we are adding considerably more producers, farmers, if you will, to our membership base as well. We've continued to grow over the last 17 years. Our membership has grown every year, and we continue to get more active and more involved.
Well, Jim, one of your newer programs, and I think you're in the third cycle, you call it the Green Agribusiness Designation Program, which essentially recognizes some of your members for exceptional stewardship. Tell us a little bit about the Green Agribusiness Program.
It's interesting to look back at history of the program, Kirk. We kicked it off because many retailers, very large retailers that some of our members or our members' customers sell to, want to have a more positive impact on the environment. So our members challenged us to figure out how to recognize or at least acknowledge some of the things that we do in agriculture that are positive in terms of reducing carbon footprint or basically reducing energy usage, all those kinds of things. Our program, the Green Agribusiness Program, encourages members to apply based on the kinds of things they have done to do just that, reduce their energy usage, reduce their carbon footprint, whatever it may be that really helps protect the water and air. We have run this for 3 years, as you mentioned. Our participation continues to grow, and the objective is threefold. First, of course, bring even to our members' own attention the kinds of things that they are really doing already to help the environment. Second is provide some of that information to other members that may not be as involved or proactive in that regard, just some ideas and things they might consider. And third is to highlight for the general public the kind of things agriculture is already doing to be more sustainable and help protect our resources. It's worked very, very well. We're pretty excited about it, and frankly, we have other states that are looking at the program. Other national organizations think that there's a real role here to, again, primarily highlight the positive things we already do in agriculture.
You know, Jim, I was looking through the criteria for the nominees. We have energy conservation, recycling, reducing waste. You mentioned the carbon footprint. I don't know if this organization or your member, New Zealand or Zealand Farm Services, was a past recipient, but Cliff Mewson has been on this program, as you know, talking about some of the wonderful things they're doing with methane gas.
You know, Zealand is a real model, and, you know, many of the things that they've done, of course, to protect the environment, but also because it makes economic sense from a business perspective. Using methane gas from a local landfill to help power their operation in Zealand, buying trucks that receive better mileage or have better mileage per mile or better usage of fuel per mile, those kinds of things, reducing their water runoff. They do all sorts of different things that actually are environmentally sustainable as well as make economic sense.
Jim, I'm talking with Jim Byram, who's president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. You mentioned that you're growing your membership among producers. Do you find that the producers are equally interested in stewardship and greening up a bit as some of the input suppliers and other members of your organization?
No question about it. And, you know, the irony is that while historically it's always been a bit of a challenge for the industry, the broad industry, both producers and agribusiness to look at regulations that might force some of those stewardship activities, the irony is the marketplace is driving most of those decisions today. They're requiring a more sustainable production pattern. So that's happening. Those producers that we engage with are heavily involved with their customers, if you will, to make sure that they do the kinds of things their customers and their customers' customers, basic consumers, want to see. So we're finding that there's a broad group of folks out here that recognize that we have to do things that are sustainable, that make sense not just for the environment but economically as well. And marrying those two is actually a pretty solid plan.
Well, we like to refer to agriculture as the original green industry on this program, and it sounds to me like you've taken that a step further with your green program, which is your green agribusiness designation program. Jim, let's turn to you mentioned your legislative responsibilities and monitoring things that are going on not only in the state legislature but nationally. A lot of concern about the farm bill. The last farm bill was extended because the House didn't take up the Senate version. Where are we now with getting a reauthorization of the farm bill?
Well, I think clearly after the end of this month, we're going to see some things happen on the farm bill to try to put a new bill in place. I think that it appears there's a lot of momentum behind the cost savings that can be associated with some of those farm programs. I think that's going to be an important driver to help a new farm bill occur. We certainly have a lot of leadership in Michigan. Senator Stabenow, of course, Debbie Stabenow chairs the Senate Ag Committee. Dan Benchek, a congressman from the northern part of the state, is now on the House Ag Committee. We've met with both, and both seem pretty optimistic that we can get something done. I think it's going to be important to recognize the priorities in the farm bill. Crop insurance is on the tip of everybody's tongue. Crop insurance is critical. We need to eliminate direct payments where the government's writing checks to farmers, whether they need it or not. That's a bit of an issue. And then third, we're going to take a look at some conservation programs. I think everybody broadly agrees that conservation programs are very important. And, of course, nutrition, the supplemental nutrition program, SNAP, or food stamps, as it used to be known, we have to have that in the farm bill, because if we don't have it, we aren't going to bring urban votes along to pass those that are probably those portions of the program that are probably more important to producers. But I think there's a fair amount of optimism out here. I was just visiting with some folks yesterday that had just returned from Washington, and it seems that folks are starting to settle down a little bit, if you will, and realize the importance of this program.
Yeah, Jim, and this is sort of my editorial here, but I thought the Senate had a wonderful compromise farm bill that was going to reduce spending, eliminate the direct payments, provide the low-cost crop insurance, all the things that you just mentioned, and then the House essentially didn't even take up the provision. You say you're more optimistic. I mean, what is there been a bit of a sea change, or is there a sea change occurring in the House so that, as you mentioned, that they're really willing to move forward on this?
I think that we're seeing the House move a little bit on farm programs, even though Congressman Ryan's budget bill that he released this week slammed ag pretty hard. It sure seems to me that in the broad context, members of the House, especially from rural areas, are starting to figure out that we need a farm bill. And I think there's been a couple things that have happened to drive that. Farmers were pretty optimistic coming off last fall with high prices and generally decent yields, except in the severe drought areas or the frost areas where we had apple and cherry problems in Michigan. But I think that producers are taking a look at it now saying, hey, look, are we always going to see commodity prices at those levels? It does make sense to have a safety net. I think that's an important change. Second, I think folks in the broad context realize that if we can make changes and save money and do things better, gee, why not do it? And I know that there's some interest, especially in the South, that love direct payments for cotton and rice. But across the broader context of agriculture, the broader arena of agriculture, I think folks are saying, hey, look, we need to just take a common sense approach to what we're doing in ag spending.
Well, Jim, on that optimistic note, I'm talking with Jim Byram, my old friend and president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Congratulations on the third cycle of your Green Agribusiness Program. When you get your winner this year or winners, let us know, and we'll feature them on the program.
Kirk, we'd be pleased to do that and appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Jim, always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kirk.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today with MSU alumna Jody Lamb. Jody, welcome back to campus.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so great to be here and to be back on campus. It really is. I wish I could stay a little while longer.
Well, Jody is the author of a book called Easter and Peters, Operation Cool, in which Jody sensitively handles the complicated dynamic that is the alcoholic mother. Easter and Peters, Operation Cool, from Scribe in 2012, is about a 12-year-old, socially awkward, straight-A student who's plan, Operation Cool, is to reinvent herself. So, Jody, tell us more about that, and what's the book about?
Easter and Peters, Operation Cool is a middle grade novel, so it's written for ages 8 to 13. Like you said, it's about a girl who's trying to reinvent herself, and her plan is derailed as she copes with her depressed and alcoholic mother. And it's really a story of coming of age and fitting in and coping with very common family struggles, which is an alcoholic family. And so I hope that readers are inspired by the Easter character's determination and hope. And I wrote it because I grew up in a large, lovable, wonderful family in which alcoholism is a problem. And so I know this story would have moved me as a tween. And I know there are millions of children across the U.S. and the world who will also be moved by it.
Jody Lamb is my guest on MSU Today, author of Easter and Peters, Operation Cool. And Jody, what would you say is maybe the biggest myth or misunderstanding you'd like to clear up about alcoholism in families?
Alcoholism today still remains a family secret. So people think that an alcoholic is the person on the street who doesn't want a job, and a lot of children hear that word associated with people who are refusing help. They don't often think about alcoholics being wonderful people who are very active in communities and seem to have everything together, because so much happens behind closed doors. And children who grow up in a home where alcoholism or any kind of addiction is a problem are much more likely to experience various types of abuse. And as you know, that definitely is a buried secret in a lot of families. And so I think today it's the 21st century. We have more opportunity than ever before to start the conversation. people who, you know, are not affected by alcoholism should make their children aware. And if everyone starts talking about it, people who really need help will step up and get it because they'll realize that they're not alone in their struggles.
What is the best way, Jody Lamb, for a young person or anyone hearing our conversation, if they need to reach out in some way on this in alcoholism? What's your suggestion?
Young people should turn to an adult that they trust in their lives, whether it's a teacher or another family member, and let them know what's going on in their homes. For anyone, they should look at Al-Anon Family Groups. That's a wonderful support group for family members of alcoholics and other addicts. And I started going to that group, you know, just a few years ago when I found myself in this quarter-life crisis, and boy, I wish I had known about it and gone very earlier. I would have received a lot of strength from talking about the problem and getting to know others and learning how they coped with such problems.
And Jody, is Easter Ann Peters' Operation Cool a hopeful, positive book, and summarize what you hope readers take from it?
It is a very hopeful book, and I've been so pleased to hear feedback from readers who say, you know, I have read some books on the subject, but you've done something different here. A lot of those books are very dark and difficult to read because you feel so badly for the characters experiencing that. And I wanted to make sure that the character Easter is very relatable. So even though she is going through problems at home with her mother, she's also a girl forging ahead with fitting in and going through your typical everyday struggles at school. She even has a bully. And so I think readers can really identify with her, with the character. And because there isn't so much emphasis on what's going on at home, readers can handle it. They know that that Easter, in the end, is going to find her way. And in the end, Easter and her family are on the road to recovery. And so it is a very hopeful ending.
And what do you hope they take from it, the main point, do you think?
Yeah, I hope that that readers are inspired by Easter's determination to find a solution and by her hope. For readers who don't have alcoholics in their lives, I hope that this story fosters an understanding about alcoholism as a disease and maybe some sensitivity to what their friends, classmates, neighbors, teammates might be going through at home.
And what's next for you, as I'm sure you're not done with this crusade? What's next?
I really wish I could clone myself because I feel such urgency in writing more and I enjoy it so much. So I'm currently working on a sequel to the Easter Ann Peters story, that's for a slightly older audience. But I also have some nonfiction books in the works that are designed to help children deal with very tough subjects, including living with an alcoholic. And I hope some way to provide those books at no cost to children. So that's my next big endeavor.
and tell people how you'd like them to stay in touch with you, social media or email. How can people stay up with what you're doing?
I would love to hear from my fellow Spartans and anyone in the community. I am on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, basically any social media that's out there. You can find me there, and all of those links are on my website, jodylamb.com.
That's Jody Lamb, and there's more at jodylamb.com, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
Turn it up, a little bit higher. Radio, turn it up, so you know, radio.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.